Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across Northern British Columbia. Our podcast is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program that the Specialist Services Committee, which is a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation from local health authorities. We are casting to you today from the traditional territory of the Kleidlay-Tené First Nation.
You're listening to QualityCast North. I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Deanna Danskin.
Today, we're going to be talking about equity. Equity, which is the fair distribution of services and benefits according to population need, is one of the key dimensions of quality healthcare. Since late 2020, and following reports of widespread systemic racism in healthcare centres, provincial healthcare has been making efforts to acknowledge and address systemic racism and improve cultural safety for Indigenous patients and healthcare workers. So what has been the response of our healthcare leadership in Northern BC? In this week's episode, we explore the relationship between healthcare leadership, cultural safety and humility, and quality. Our guest today is Dr. Helene Smith, a family practitioner in Northern BC, as well as the chair of the Northern Health Medical Advisory Committee, also referred to as NHMAC. So thanks for coming on today to talk about a topical and challenging issue and the work you and your team have been doing towards addressing it. But before we talk about this work, I wonder if you can give us a little bit of background about yourself and your role. And so I'm going to start by asking you, what was your career path to this point, your journey into medicine?
Thank you, Cher. It's such a nice opportunity to join both you and Deanna here today. I think, you know, when I look back at my career path, it was actually such an interesting, finding. My parents came to visit a couple of years ago, and my mom brought some of our childhood memorabilia with. And part of that memorabilia, there was actually a note that I probably typed in 1988. I was still in elementary school. And I typed a letter to one of my friends and I said, you know what, one day I want to be a doctor and live in America. So the first part did come true, the second part not. However, I'm very fortunate that we ended up in Canada and this is where we are. For me, like I said, I think medicine has always been in the cards for me. I think there was something that drew me to this occupation. What it was, I can't tell you. But I think, as I've just mentioned, from a young age, this seemed to be something that I had a passion for. So I obviously did my schooling in South Africa, and I also attended the University of Pretoria, where I did my medical degree. So if there's any alumni from Tikkies listening to this QualiCast, shout out to all of you guys. In any case, I finished my training in South Africa. I also met my lovely husband during that time. After we did our medical school, we worked in South Africa for a couple of more years. And then in 2006, we decided, you know what, we want to change. We were up for an adventure at that stage. We decided to come to Canada for a year. And here we are in 2022, still in Canada, working and living in Quesnel. So in a nutshell, that is my career path.
That's a great story. We're so glad to have you here in BC. And can you tell us a little bit about the town of Quesnel and where you live and a little bit about your primary care practice as well?
So obviously, like you've just mentioned, I live and work in Quesnel, and that is on the unceded territory of the Lhtako Dene Nation. It's a beautiful part of our province, and I am biased because I've moved away as well. I actually lived in Victoria, and nothing against Victoria, but we miss Quesnel so much that we actually moved back. So I really love our community and what it has to offer. So specifically for us, just a bit of history and background on our town per se. We have about 25,000 catchment area in our town. Our town is serviced from a medical point of view, is what I'm focusing on here, by about 23 GPs. We've got 2 general surgeons, 2 internal medicine specialists, 1 ear, nose, and throat specialist, 1 obstetrician and gynecologist, and 1 psychiatrist. It's a great community of practice. For myself, my practice, I do have a family practice, and I also practice family practice anesthesia. And this has been my go-to since I arrived here in 2006.
That's great. Now, you also have an important medical leadership role, being the chair of the Northern Health Medical Advisory Committee, or NHMAC. Can you tell us a little bit about the purpose of NHMAC and its membership, and specifically your role as the chair of this committee?
So NHMAC, for those of you that's interested and want some light reading, our terms of reference is posted on the Northern Health website. So it is accessible to anybody that really want to dive into, you know, what it is that we actually do. So like I've mentioned, our terms of reference clearly articulate what is our purpose. And we regularly update our terms of reference so that we are sure that we still do what we need to do. So in a nutshell, NHMAC, the purpose of that committee is to advise the board and the CEO on privileges of our medical staff, provision of medical care in our facilities, monitoring the quality as well as the effectiveness of medical care provided in our facilities, adequacy of medical staff resources. We focus on continuous medical education for physicians and staff, planning goals to meet the needs of the population we serve. We also provide input into Northern Health decision-making. We guide professional issues, operational issues that might affect the care of patients. So quite a broad, aspect if you look at that on what we do. But like I say, if you're interested, it is there for anybody that wants to read through it. But that's in a nutshell how I would describe what our purpose is. Our membership consists of 7 medical directors. We have nurse practitioner, as well as a midwife that sits on NHMAC to represent those areas. We also have the chairs of the 3 health service delivery area MACs. So how I can actually just explain that a little bit. NHMAC is the health authority MAC. And then under NHMAC, there's 3 regional MACs, one in the Northwest, one in the North East, as well as one in Northern Interior. So the chairs of those regional MACs also sit on NHMAC. Then we also have membership at large of each of our health service delivery areas. So we have membership at large from Northeast, Northwest, as well as Northern Interior, just to make sure we have equitable representation from all of those areas. So we also have those. And then we have the medical program leads. These medical leads represent programs, for instance, renal care, cancer care, pediatrics, the perinatal program, the surgical program, all the medical programs that we have in our health authority do have a medical lead, and they are also represented on NHMAC. And there's 15 currently serving on NHMAC. Then we also have appointed medical leads. That's the vice president of medicine, the chief medical health officer, the medical lead for informatics, and then myself, the NHMAC chair. So it is a big group of people, but it is needed. You don't want too big, but you also don't want too small. And you want to ensure that your membership represent what you need so that we can do the work that we do. And then as a chair, obviously, my role is to chair the meetings. We hold meetings every month. Apart from the summer months, we don't have meetings in July and August. And then it's my job to report to the board on issues of concern to the NHMAC. We report on all medical staff recommendations requiring the board's attention. And also where it comes to healthcare quality, our meetings are structured to give programs that deliver care in our health authority the opportunity to present updates on their programs, what are struggles that they might be facing, or any new initiatives that they need input from. So it's a valuable platform for all medical programs to present to us and get the input that they need. This shapes our healthcare. This is where we take that advice forward. We steer these programs and get the job done. So quality is a strategic initiative of Northern Health. I think you're very familiar with that. And at the NHMAC level, we also strive to achieve that.
Thank you for that very comprehensive description of the governance structure of NHMAC. It's, I think, sort of a mystery to a lot of people, but very important. So that's very helpful to hear that. And I also just wanted to add for our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with the geography of Northern Health, it's very large. The health service deliveries altogether are probably the size of several European countries. So it's a really large and vast and diverse health authority. So again, having all that membership on the structure clearly is very important. So I wanted now to turn over to the issue of cultural safety and humility that Dr. Chewy introduced at the beginning of the session. So just coming to that topic, how big of a problem is systemic racism in Canadian healthcare, and how did the issue come to light?
Thank you for that question, Deanna. You know what? I think just to highlight maybe how big of a problem this is, I want to flag a couple of things. I think the urgency where it comes to addressing cultural safety and humility in our healthcare became apparent in 2015 when all the CEOs of the of British Columbia's Health Authority actually signed a commitment to cultural safety. That is a major step. You know, everybody came to the table and realized this is a major issue that we are facing. We should do something about it. And then I think more recently, it obviously became apparent. It's in the news. I think we've all heard it. The accusations regarding, you know, cultural inappropriate care in some of our emergency rooms that led to the In Plain Sight report of Mary Ellen Drupal Lafond. So I think, you know, to highlight the how big of a problem is this, I think this speaks volumes just to highlight for us what it is that we're actually dealing with here. So these were big steps, like I say, to highlight these issues, and it called us all to action, you know. And if you just spoke about the geography there, it's interesting. Northern Health is home to 35.6% of the province's First Nation population. So we in Northern Health per se, and everywhere in our province as well as in Canada, but specific in Northern Health, we have a great task ahead of us to provide quality and equitable care in a cultural safe way.
And when we talk more about systemic racism, do you have any comments on what the impact is to health quality to individuals of Indigenous origin that may be facing systemic racism when they seek care?
I think you can just do your own research and, you know, just even doing a Google search to look into these things. But from a medical point of view, there has been multiple published articles in medical journals that highlight the disparity between Indigenous and non-Indigenous patients' health outcomes. So it's clearly documented in multiple articles that have done research on this. But I think some of the things to highlight maybe for our listeners, just to understand that what is it that might deter an Indigenous patient to access care, you know, and obviously if you have a deterrent to access care, you are going to have poorer health outcomes. So what are the things that they struggle with? You know, there's a lot of stigma. There's intergenerational trauma. There's institutional racism. There's lack of trust. No knowledge from the provider that you're seeing regarding traditional practices, just to name a few things, you know, that might be something that just puts a hold on that Indigenous patient to access care, which is unfortunate because that obviously leads to poorer outcomes. So this disparity is something that is obvious, it's well documented, and I think that is what we can phrase here today on why they have poorer outcomes.
So moving forward to trying to tackle some of these issues, for yourself as a medical leader and the chair of the Northern Health MAC, how can large healthcare institutions and large healthcare systems begin to address this challenging issue?
I think firstly, you need a commitment. You need a commitment for cultural safety. You also need to bring Indigenous voices to the table. And you need to model cultural safety. It needs to be reflected in the care that you provided. And I think at NHMAC level, we said you need the silver lining that you can actually trace through everything that you do in your health authority to make sure that you provide cultural safe care. So those are a few things that I think I would mention as a starting point on how do you begin to tackle these things.
And adding on to that, are there any practical steps that Northern Health is taking?
So actually, NHMAC drafted a cultural safety and humility action plan. So this was a big piece of work that was undertaken, and we were very fortunate to have Dr. Margot Greenwood, who was the Vice President of Indigenous Health, Northern Health, that was part of our working group. And just a bit of information on Dr. Greenwood. She is of Cree ancestry with over 30 years of experience in healthcare. She's a professor at UBC. She received the Order of Canada, and recently she's been appointed as an independent senator for BC. So really the people that surrounded us trying to get this work done, we were very fortunate to have them there. And then also, we were very fortunate to have members of NHMAC volunteering to be part of this work so that we can get it done and see, you know, what it is that we need. So this draft document then came to light. This draft document is also being utilized to support the Northern Health Cultural Safety Implementation Framework that stretched from 2020 to 2025. Now, what is it actually? You're asking on what are the practical steps that's in there. So the draft action plan, and this is also available, anybody can research this on the Northern Health website. It actually addresses three aspects or three areas, if you want to say it like that. One is the self. The second is relationships. And then the third is the system. And under each of these sections, there are actions to help us achieve cultural safety. So just to highlight a few, under the self, it focuses on the individual. What can we do as individuals to assure that we provide cultural safe care? There's lots of resources on that part of the action plan, training that you can do. And so really, you know, supporting the individual and the self. The relationship part of this plan is how do we assure cultural safe care where we work in our communities, in our groups, with our colleagues? So really focusing on those relationship aspects and also then building outwards to our communities and connecting with our Indigenous partners in our community. So really focusing on that part then. And then the top tier is the system. How do we bring about change in the system per se where it comes to cultural safety? So like I say, to really go through the plan in detail, we'll probably take this whole QualiCast, but there are very tangible steps under each of those on how to achieve this. And we have now moved to the implementation plan where we are actually digging into each of these areas to see how do we move this forward organizationally so that we can bring about change. And an interesting point, just from an organizational point of view, Northern Health was the first health authority to establish an Indigenous Health Department, also having a senior executive leadership position created, which is the VP of Indigenous Health. So really, you know, our health authority has been trying and making or breaking ground where it comes to cultural safety and humility. So I think that is important to note as well.
Well, thank you for that. That's really good to hear. And it's really good to hear that direction coming so strongly from the very top, leading by example. And it's also great to hear it from you, clearly a very passionate advocate for cultural humility and safety. So thank you for that. So let's now switch gears a little bit to the topic of medical leadership, if that's all right. Medical leadership is probably not the first career interest that springs to the minds of most new graduates leaving medical school. So what do you think during a physician's career do you makes a physician want to become a medical leader?
I thought about this and I don't think there's a clear cut answer for all of us. I think some of the things that came to light for me is obviously, I think most people who go into medical leadership have a passion. They have a passion for these kinds of leadership positions. So I think that's the first thing. You see a lot of physicians that come into it because of a passion for this role. And then I think there's also a few that, you know, their curiosity is just your curiosity going through maybe a program delivering at your hospital or something that just, you know, creates that little opening there. What is medical leadership? What does it entail? Or it might have, you know, stimulated your interest in having some kind of contact with a medical leader or a program. So I think some of our medical leaders come to the table because of that. And then I also think there's some that come because there is a need for change, maybe in themselves, where they want a change of, you know, day to day, or maybe wanting to step out of medicine and doing some kind of administration, so looking into that, but also the need to bring about change where you work. You know, we see a lot of medical leaders that take on some of these responsibilities because they want to bring about change. So I think that is probably what I would flag as who, you know, steps up to these type of medical leader positions.
Now, it's often the role of medical leaders often equated to the task of herding cats, which I have to say, from personal experience, I find it's actually quite an accurate analogy. But what do you find in particular rewarding about the role of medical leader?
So for me personally, this medical leadership, it challenges me every day. It puts me out of my comfort zone. And I must say, I have to constantly adapt and grow as to not one situation that you deal with is the same. So I'm also very fortunate to work in an organization that values medical leaders and empower them by offering training to support your role. And I think if I didn't have that, this role would be quite difficult for me. So I really appreciate that I had the opportunity to, you know, empower myself more by going for this. And especially for me, I did the SAUDER training at UBC that I found so helpful. So I really feel that this is really something that I can't say enough about, really empowering our leaders and train them on how to become good leaders. And then I also think experience counts a lot. I've learned so much from my colleagues. However, I don't think a lack of experience, you know, should be a deterrent for any new leader. Unfortunately, that comes with time, and we all have to start somewhere on this journey. And mostly, I love to work with people. I have a passion for this job. I have a passion for being a physician. And I strive to improve in every situation. You know, certain situations we face is not always easy, or you feel like maybe I didn't deal with that one so well. And I think having that, you know, retroflexion and making an introspection maybe to make sure that next time I do try to deal with it better or deal with it differently. So I think having that as well is important for me as a medical leader.
What do you think are the biggest challenges, perhaps in the broader context, to coordinating medical leaders in a large, complex organization, and particularly one that's geographically dispersed, such as Northern Health? Can you give us any examples of how you might tackle this?
So this one I'll answer from an NHMAC point of view. How do we do this? How do we coordinate, you know, these services? And like you've heard, we do have a large geographical area, so it is difficult to have everybody in one room. So I think there, from a coordination point of view, it's important to create agendas that reflect the work that we do and also what we strive to achieve. So we, like I've mentioned before as well, we give our medical as well as our program medical leaders an opportunity to present and bring forward issues that they might struggle with. And we actually structure our agendas utilizing the VP of Medicine service plan that is created every 3 years. So all of our members have the opportunity to actually note their three top priorities for the next 3 years as part of this service plan. And we get regular updates on all of these programs at an NHMAC level. So I think from a coordination point of view, that is important, that you have some kind of pathway that you can follow to make sure we get to each of these programs that's so important for healthcare delivery. And then geographically, like I've mentioned here, you need to assure connectivity, not just from an IT point of view. I mean, we meet mostly virtually, but we do meet face-to-face 3 times a year. And that has been shown to be extremely valuable for our members. You need that connectivity with your colleagues. You need to spend that time with them. So I think highlighting our unique challenges to our geography, this has also led to remarkable innovation. Just as a sideline from all of this that we're struggling with, we actually saw so much innovation in the way that we provide care. just to overcome these burdens. So I really have to give credit, you know, for our medical leaders and executive leads in achieving this. So that's how I would probably answer, you know, the coordination. How do we achieve that? And what are some of the things that we're doing from an NHMAC level to achieve that?
And from your perspective as a medical leader and chair of NHMAC, well, what can I ask you, what does the term quality healthcare mean to you?
You know, I think the thing that sums up quality healthcare for me the best is the quadruple aim. I think for those who's not familiar with the quadruple aim of healthcare, it focuses on those four areas. And I think that sums it up for me. You know, the one is better health outcomes is one of the objectives. We want lower costs. We want to improve the clinician's experience, and we also want to improve the patient's experience. And I think if you can achieve those four things, that's quality for me.
Yeah, I heartily agree. That's great. Now, a question for you. How can physicians, seeing as you bridge the two groups, if you like, how can physicians work more closely with their health authorities to improve the quality of the care that we deliver jointly?
So I think some practical steps maybe would be an advocate for your patient and the care that you provide. I really think we still see that the squeaky wheel does get attention. So don't feel that that goes nowhere. You know, we are the advocates for our patients. We also have a lot of experience where it comes to how do you deliver care. So make sure that you remain an advocate for those. And I also think, you know, sometimes we think blue sky thinking is out of the question, but just in Northern Health, like I've highlighted before, we've seen a lot of blue sky thinking where it comes to, you know, creation of new programs. How do we do things differently? So don't throw that out. Keep that blue sky thinking at the back of your head. You know, we never want to be stagnant where it comes to healthcare. We want to have that innovation stay. I would also say, and I see this a lot, is be aware of the different structures of your organization. Know how and where do you go to access information or access help? What strategies can you do, or who can you contact? How do you follow up with this? It's important to understand your organization and where to go and which door to go to. So really making sure about that. And then the last thing I would say there is also empower yourself. You know, I think we provide this PQI Physician Quality Initiative through Northern Health as well. We provide PQI training. That's actually very valuable. I think if you really want to move a program forward or bring something new to the table, empower yourself to do that well. How do you do a good pitch? What do you need to have in your pitch? You know, what data can you use? So I really think empowering yourself as a physician can also be very helpful in this process.
So that's great advice around understanding the system that you work in, which can be very challenging in a large and complex organization, as most health authorities are. But you give me hope to sort of note that it's possible. It's possible to do that and find the right people to talk to and the right avenues to follow up on things. So as we begin to draw towards the end of the interview, we just have a couple more questions, again, changing theme a little bit here. So I'm wondering if you could go back in time and meet your former younger self, fresh out of medical school. What life or career advice would you give yourself?
You know what, I think for me, making sure you understand what work-life balance works for you. We are all individuals, you know, and one system doesn't work for somebody else necessarily. Yes, we do have some responsibilities that come with this job, but I think as a person, to assure that satisfaction and joy that we are all after, is make sure you understand what that balance looks like for you. I would also strongly advise my younger self to consider having a mentor or a coach. This has really become something that is quite popular now. And I think when I graduated, this was not something that you actually even knew about. And these, positions, if that's what you want to call them, are so helpful, I think, for anybody, whether you're a physician or not. A mentor or a coach is a great thing to have. And I also think, you know, we all deal with difficult cases or, you know, we had an outcome that we didn't like. What I would advise myself there is talk about it. It helps, you know, discuss it with a colleague. You know, we all share difficult cases or outcomes and our stress levels are high. So this is really something that I would probably advise a younger self. Also, I would advise, you know, choosing a workplace that aligns with your values. We have a stressful job. So make sure where you end up working, you can see yourself working in that environment and the values of that workplace aligns well with yours. And then lastly, I would say, try to relax if you're on call.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it's great for not only the past younger selves, but that's great advice for the present as well. So thank you for that. So you've already spoken to us a lot about, you know, how much you enjoy living in Quesnel, but I'm wondering if you can expand and sort of specify what you really love and enjoy about living and working in Northern BC.
I think for me, we moved away from Northern BC and lived in an urban setting and we came back. So I think it speaks to itself how much I do love a rural setting and where I currently live and stay. So from a living point of view, I remain an African in my bones. I don't think that will ever change, even though I'm a Canadian now. So the winters are still tough for me. These cold temperatures don't come easy to this body of mine. However, it did push me to learn a new skill. I took up skiing, living in the north, and I must say I enjoy it so much. And I also love this beautiful land that we live on. You know, every time I come back, or you go on a trip and you come back and you just drive through BC or just even in your town and in the surrounding areas, I'm always amazed by the pristine nature in British Columbia that we call home. So sometimes we take these things for granted. But I think living in Northern BC, those are the things that I would highlight. And then work, like I've mentioned, I really like a rural setting. I don't think I'm really a city person. And our training in South Africa really geared us for this type of practice. And it really gives me a satisfaction where it comes to my job. And also, I don't think I would be able to practice to this kind of scope that I am practicing currently if I did not live in a rural community. So I really appreciate that the rural community has afforded me to do. And then lastly, I think, you know, in a rural community, we really rely on our colleagues, you know. I think more so maybe than in an urban setting, just because we do not share all the resources, we do not have the staffing levels. So you really need to work close together. So I think working in a rural community and even just coming out of COVID, this has really strengthened this view for me so much more. And I feel privileged to work in a rural community where we've got this kind of excellent, you know, teamwork, collegiality, because we do try and achieve excellent care. And I think, you know, I'm very fortunate to have that here.
Well, thank you for that answer. That was wonderful to hear. And thank you. Sadly, we've actually come to the end of our interview. And I have to say, I found it most informative. And I think there was something for anyone at any stage of their medical career in this week's episode. So thank you for that. But we have to reach the end of the interview, unfortunately. And so I can hear the closing music coming. And so I'd like to extend a big thank you to you, Helene, for joining us today. To show our appreciation, we'll be sending you one of our exclusive Quality Cast North coffee mugs. And if you, the listener, would like to know more about today's episode, you can find the show notes on our website. But until next time, thank you for joining us. I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Deanna Danskin.
And you've been listening to Quality Cast North. Today's episode was hosted and co-produced by Dr. Cher Chewy and Deanna Danskin, with technical support from Matt Walker. Original music by Daniel Chewy, and artistic support by Reggie Goodine. Quality Cast North is recorded on the traditional territory of the Clayclaytonay First Nation. If you enjoyed today's interview, check out our other episodes available on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you find your podcasts.